11. Answers. A Devil's Bargain. Anathame. The Thunderhawk's armoured flanks were not as sleek as those of a Stormbird, but it was functional and would take them back to Davin's moon more swiftly than the bigger craft. Tech servitors and Mechanicum flight crews prepped it for launch, and Logan willed them to hurry. Each passing second brought the Warmaster closer to death, and he wasn't going to allow that to happen. Several hours had passed since they had brought the Warmaster aboard, but he hadn't cleaned his armor or weapons, preferring to go back the way he'd come out, though he had replenished his ammunition supply. The deck was still slick with the blood of those they had battered from their path, and only now, with time to reflect on what they had done, did Loken feel ashamed. He couldn't remember any of the faces, but he remembered the crack of skulls and the cries of pain. All the noble ideals of the Astartes. What did they mean when they could be so easily cast off? Kirill Sinderman was right. Common decency and civil behaviour were just a thin veneer over the animal core that lurked in the hearts of all men, even Astartes. If the mores of civilized behaviour could so easily be forgotten, what else might be betrayed with impunity in difficult circumstances? Looking around the deck, Logan could sense a barely perceptible difference. Though hammers still beat, hatches still banged, and gurneys laden with ordnance curled through the deck spaces, there was a subdued atmosphere to the embarkation deck, as though the memory of what had happened still lingered on the air. The blast doors of the deck were shut tight, but Logan could still hear the muffled chants and songs of the crowds gathered outside. Hundreds of people maintained a candlelit vigil in the wide corridors surrounding the embarkation deck, and filled the observation bays. Perhaps 70 watched him from the windowed gantry above. They carried offerings and votive papers inscribed with pleas for the Warmaster's survival, random scribbles and outpourings of feelings. Quite who these entreaties were directed at was a mystery, but it seemed to give people a purpose, and Logan could appreciate the value of purpose in these dark hours. The men of Lucasta were already on board, though their journey to the embarkation deck had nearly sparked a stampede of terrified people, the memory of the last time the Astartes had marched through them still fresh and bloody. Torgadden and Vipus performed the last pre-launch checks on their men, and all that remained for him to do was to give the word. He heard footsteps behind him and turned to see the armoured figure of Tybalt Marr, captain of the 18th Company, approaching him, sometimes known as the Either, due to his uncanny resemblance to Verulam Moy, who had been known as the Oar. He was cast so firmly in the image of the Warmaster that Loken's breath caught in his throat. He bowed as his fellow captain approached.
"Captain Logan," said Marr, returning the bow, "might I have a word?"
"Of course, Tybalt," he said. "I'm sorry about Verulam. He was a brave man."
Marr nodded curtly, and Logan could only imagine the pain he must be going through. Logan had grieved for fallen brothers before, but Moy and Marr had been inseparable, enjoying a symbiotic relationship not unlike identical twins. As friends and brothers, they had fought best as a pair, but once again, Moy had been lucky enough to gain a place in the spear tip, and Marr had not. This time, Moy had paid for that luck with his life.
"Thank you, Captain Logan. I appreciate the sentiment," replied Marr.
"Was there something you wanted, Tybalt?"
"Are you returning to the moon?"
asked Marr, and Logan knew exactly why Marr was here. He nodded.
"We are. There may be something there that will help the Warmaster. If there is, we will find it."
"Is it in the place where Verulam died?"
"Yes," said Logan.
"I think so." "Could you use another sword arm? I want to see where it happened."
Logan saw the aching grief in Mar's eyes and said,
"Of course we could."
Marr nodded his thanks, and they marched up the assault ramp as the Thunderhawk's engines powered up with the shrieking of a banshee's wail. Axeman watched Abaddon punch the sparring servitor's shoulder, tearing off its sword limb before closing to deliver a series of rapid hammer blows to its torso. Flesh caved beneath the assault, bone and steel broke, and the construct collapsed in a splintered mess of meat and metal. It was the third servitor Abaddon had destroyed in the last 30 minutes. Ezekiel had always worked through his angst with his fists, and this time was no different. Violence and killing was what the first captain had been bred for, but it had become such a way of life to him that it was the only way he knew how to express his frustrations. Aximand himself had dismantled and reassembled his bolter 6 times, slowly and methodically laying each part on an oiled cloth before cleaning it meticulously. Where Abaddon unleashed his pain through violence, Aximand preferred to detach his mind through familiar routines. Powerless to do anything constructive to help the commander, they had both retreated to the things they knew best.
"The Master of Armories will have your head for destroying his servitors like that," said Aximand,
looking up as Abaddon pummeled what was left of the servitor to destruction. Sweating and breathing hard, Abaddon stepped from the training cage, sweat lathering his body in gleaming sheets, and his silver-wrapped topknot slick with sweat. Even for an Astartes, he was huge, muscular and solid as stone. Torgadon often teased Abaddon, joking that he left leadership of the Gesterin to Folcus Kyber because he was too big to fit in a suit of Terminator armor.
"It's what they're for," snapped Abaddon. "I'm not sure you're meant to be that hard on them."
Abaddon shrugged, lifted a towel from his arming chamber, and hung it around his shoulders.
"How can you be calm at a time like this?"
"Trust me, I'm not calm, Ezekiel."
"You look calm."
"Just because I'm not smashing things with my fists doesn't mean I'm not choleric."
Abaddon picked up a piece of his armor and began polishing it, before hurling it aside with an angry snarl.
"Center your humors, Ezekiel," advised Aximand. "It's not good to go too far out of balance. You might not come back."
"I know," sighed Abaddon. "But I'm all over the place. Choleric, melancholic, saturnine, all of them at the same time. I can't sit still for a second. What if he doesn't make it, little Horus? What if he dies?"
The first captain stood and paced the arming chambers, wringing his hands, and Aximand could see the blood rising in his cheeks as his anger and frustration grew once more.
"It's not fair," growled Abaddon. "It shouldn't be like this. The Emperor wouldn't let this happen. He shouldn't let this happen."
"The Emperor hasn't been here for a long time, Ezekiel."
"Does he even know what's happened? Does he even care anymore?"
"I don't know what to tell you, my friend," said Aximand,
picking up his bolter once more and pressing the catch that released the magazine, seeing that Abaddon had a new target for his impotent rage.
"It's not been the same since he left us after Ulanor," raged Abaddon. "He left us to clean up what he couldn't be bothered to finish, and for what? Some damn project on Terra that's more important than us?"
"Careful, Ezekiel," warned Aximand. "You're in dangerous territory."
"It's true, though, isn't it? Don't tell me you don't feel the same. I know you do."
"It's different now, yes," conceded Aximand.
"We're out here fighting and dying to conquer the galaxy for him, and he won't even stand with us out on the frontier. Where is his honor? Where is his pride?"
"Ezekiel," said Aximand, throwing down his bolter and rising to his feet. "Enough. If you were anyone else, I would strike you down for those words. The Emperor is our lord and master. We are sworn to obey him."
"We are pledged to the commander. Don't you remember your Mournival oath?"
"I remember it well enough, Ezekiel," retorted Aximand. "Better than you, it seems, for we also pledged to the Emperor above all Primarchs."
Abaddon turned away and gripped the wire mesh of the training cage, his muscles bulging and his head bowed. With a cry of animal rage, he tore the mesh panel from the cage and hurled it across the training halls, where it landed at the armored feet of Erebus, who stood silhouetted in the doorway.
"Erebus," said Aximand in surprise. "How long have you been standing there?"
"Long enough, little Horus. Long enough." Aximand felt a dagger of unease settle in his heart and said,
"Ezekiel was just angry and upset. His humors are out of balance, don't—"
Erebus waved his hand to brush off Aximand's words, the dim light reflecting from the brushed steel plates of his armor. "Fear not, my friend. You know how it is between us. We are all lodge members here. If anyone were to ask me what I heard here today, you know what I would tell them, don't you?"
"I can't say."
"Exactly," smiled Erebus. But far from being reassured, Aximand suddenly felt beholden to the first chaplain of the Word-Bearers, as though his silence were some kind of bargaining chip.
"Did you come for anything, Erebus?"
demanded Abaddon, his collar still to the fore. I did, nodded Erebus, holding out his palm to reveal his silver lodge medal. The War Master's condition is deteriorating, and Targost has called a meeting.
Now?
Asked Axemand.
Why?
Erebus shrugged.
I can't say.
They gathered once more in the aft hold of the flagship, travelling the lonely service stairwells to the deep decks of the Vengeful Spirit. Tapers again lit the way, and Axemand found himself desperate to get this over with. The War Master was dying, and they were holding a meeting? Who approaches? Asked a hooded figure from the darkness.
Three souls, Erebus replied.
What are your names? The figure asked.
Do we need to bother with this now?
Snapped Axemand.
You know it's us, said Iray.
What are your names? Repeated the figure. I can't say, said Erebus. Pass, friends.
They entered the aft hold, Axemand shooting a venomous glance at the hooded Luke Sedere, who simply shrugged and followed them in. Candles lit the vast, scaffold-framed area as usual, but instead of the lively banter of warriors, a subdued, solemn atmosphere shrouded the hold. All the usual suspects were there. Sergar Targost, Luke Sedere, Kaelus Ekadon, Falkus Kyber, and many more officers and file troopers he knew or recognized. And Malachurst the Twisted. Erebus led the way into the hold, moving to stand in the center of the group as Axemand nodded towards the War Master's equerry.
It's been some time since I've seen you at a meeting, said Axemand.
It has indeed, agreed Malachurst. I have neglected my duties as a lodge member, but there are matters before us that demand my attendance.
Brothers, said Targost, beginning the meeting, we live in grim times.
Get to the point, Sergar, snarled Abaddon. We don't have time for this.
The lodge master glared at Abaddon, but saw the first captain's lurking temper and nodded rather than confront him. Instead, he gestured towards Erebus and addressed the lodge as a whole.
Our brother of the 17th Legion would speak to us. Shall we hear him?
We shall, intoned the sons of Horus.
Erebus bowed and said,
Brother Ezekiel is right. We do not have time to stand on ceremony, so I will be blunt. The War Master is dying, and the fate of the Crusade stands on a knife edge. We alone have the power to save it.
What does that mean, Erebus?
Asked Axemand. Erebus paced around the circumference of the circle as he spoke.
The apothecaries can do nothing for the War Master. For all their dedication, they cannot cure him of this sickness. All they can do is keep him alive. And they cannot do that for much longer. If we do not act now, it will be too late.
What do you propose, Erebus? Asked Targost.
The tribes on Davin, said Erebus.
What of them?
Asked the lodge master.
They are a feral people, controlled by warrior castes. But then we all know this. Our own quiet order bears the hallmarks of their warrior lodges in its structure and practices. Each of their lodges venerates one of the autochthonic predators of their lands, and this is where our order differs. In my time on Davin, during its compliance, I studied the lodges and their ways in search of corruption or religious profanity. I found nothing of that, but in one lodge I found what I believe might be our only hope of saving the War Master.
Despite himself, Axemand became caught up in Erebus's words. His oratory, worthy of the iterators, with the precise modulation of tone and timbre to entrance his audience.
Tell us! Shouted Luke Sedere.
The lodge took up the cry until Sergar Targost was forced to restore order with a bellowed command.
We must take the War Master to the Temple of the Serpent Lodge on Davin, declared Erebus. The priests there are skilled in the mystic arts of healing, and I believe they offer the best chance of saving the War Master.
Mystic arts? Asked Axemand. What does that mean? It sounds like sorcery.
I do not believe it is, said Erebus, rounding on him. But what if it was, Brother Horus? Would you refuse their aid? Would you allow the War Master to die just so we can feel pure? Is the War Master's life not worth a little risk?
Risk, yes, but this feels wrong.
Wrong would not be doing all that we could to save the commander, said Targost.
Even if it means tainting ourselves with impure magic.
Don't get all high and mighty, Axemand, said Targost. We do this for the Legion. There is no other choice.
Then it is already decided,
demanded Axemand, pushing past Erebus to stand in the centre of the circle.
If so, then why this charade of debate? Why bother even summoning us here?
Malachurst limped from Targost's side and shook his head.
We must all be in accord here, Brother Horus. You know how the Lodge operates. If you do not agree to this, then we will go no further, and the War Master will remain here, but he will die if we do nothing. You know that to be true.
You cannot ask this of me, pleaded Axemand.
I have to, my brother, said Malachurst. There is no other way.
Axemand felt the responsibility of the decision before him crushing him to the floor, as every eye in the chamber turned upon him. His eyes met Abaddon's, and he saw that Ezekiel was clearly in favour of doing whatever it took to save the War Master.
What of Torgadon and Logan?
Asked Axemand, trying to buy some time to think.
They are not here to speak.
Logan is not one of us,
shouted Kaelus Ekadon, captain of the Reaver squad.
He had his chance to join us, but turned his back on our order. As for Taric, he will follow our lead in this. There is no time to seek him out.
Axemand looked into the faces of the men around him, and he realized he had no choice. He never had from the moment he had walked into the room. Whatever it took, the War Master had to live. It was that simple. He knew there would be consequences. There always were in a devil's bargain like this. But any price was worth paying if it would save the commander. He was damned if he would be remembered as the warrior who stood by and let the War Master die.
Very well, he said at last. Let the Lodge of the Serpent do what it can.
The difference in Duvin's Moon in the few hours since they had last set foot on it was incredible, thought Logan. The cloying mists and fogs had vanished, and the sky was lightening from a musky yellow to bleached white. The stench was still there, but it too was lessened, now just unpleasant rather than overpowering. Had the death of Temba broken some kind of power that held the moon locked in a perpetual cycle of decay? As the Thunderhawk had skimmed the marshes, Logan had seen that the diseased forests were gone, their trunks collapsed in on themselves, without the life-giving corruption holding them together. Without the obscuring mists, it was easy to find the glory of terror, though, thankfully, there was no deathly message coming over the Vox this time. They touched down, and Logan led Locasta Squad to Gadden, Vipus and Mar from the Thunderhawk with the confident strides of a natural leader. Though Torgadon and Mar had held their captaincies longer than Logan, both instinctively deferred to him on this mission.
"What do you expect to find here, Garvey?"
asked Torgadon, squinting up at the collapsed hulk of the ship. He hadn't bothered to find a new helmet, and his nose wrinkled at the stench of the place.
"I'm not sure," he answered. "Answers, maybe. Something to help the War Master."
Torgadon nodded.
"Sounds good to me. What about you, Mar? What are you looking for?"
Tybalt Mar didn't answer, racking the slide of his bolter and marching towards the crashed vessel. Logan caught up with him and grabbed his shoulder guard.
"Tybalt, am I going to have a problem with you here?" "No. I just want to see where Verulam died," said Mar. "It won't be real until I've seen the place. I know I saw him in the mortuary, but that wasn't a dead man. It was just like looking in a mirror. You understand?"
Logan didn't, but he nodded anyway.
"Very well. Take up position in the file."
They marched towards the dead ship, clambering up the broken ramps of debris to the gaping holes torn in its side.
"Damn, but it feels like a lifetime since we were fighting here," said Torgadon.
"It was only 3 or 4 hours ago, Taric,"
Logan pointed out.
"I know, but still."
Eventually, they reached the top of the ramp and penetrated the darkness of the ship. The memory of the last time he had done this and what he had found at the end of the journey still fresh in Logan's mind.
"Stay alert. We don't know what else might be still alive in here."
We should have bombed the wreck from orbit, muttered Torgadden.
Quiet, hissed Loken. Didn't you hear what I said?
Tarik raised his hands in apology, and they pressed on through the groaning wreck, along darkened hallways, flickering companionways, and stinking, blackened corridors. Vipers and Loken led the way, with Torgadden and Mar guarding the rear. The shadow-haunted wreck had lost none of its power to disturb. Though the disgusting organic growths that coated every surface with glistening wetness now seemed to be dying, drying up and cracking to powder.
"What's going on in here?" asked Torgadden. "This place was like the hydroponics bay a few hours ago. Now it's—"
"Dying," completed Vipers. "Like those trees we saw earlier."
"More like dead,"
said Mar, peeling the husk of one of the growths from the wall.
"Don't touch anything," warned Loken. "Something in this ship had the power to harm the commander, and until we know what that was, we touch nothing."
Ma dropped the remains and wiped his hand on his leg as they journeyed deeper inside the ship. Loken's memory of their previous route was faultless, and they soon reached the central spine and the route to the bridge. Shafts of light speared in through holes in the hull, and dust motes floated in the air like a glittering wall. Loken led on, ducking beneath protruding bulkheads and sparking cables as they reached their ultimate destination. Loken could smell Yugen Temba long before they saw him, the reek of his putrefaction and death thick even beyond the bridge. They made their way cautiously onto the bridge, and Loken sent his warriors around the perimeter with directional chops of his hand.
"What are we going to do about those men up there?"
asked Vipers, pointing to the dead soldiers stitched to the banners hanging from the roof. "We can't just leave them like that."
"I know, but we can't do anything for them just now," said Loken. "When we destroy this hulk, they'll be at rest."
"Is that him?"
asked Mar, pointing at the bloated corpse. Loken nodded, raising his bolter and advancing on the body. A rippling motion undulated beneath the corpse's skin, and Temba's voluminous belly wobbled with internal motion. His flesh was stretched so tightly over his frame that the outlines of fat maggots and larvae could be seen beneath his parchment skin.
"Throne, he's disgusting," said Mar. "And this thing killed Varulam."
"I assume so," replied Loken. "The Warmaster didn't say exactly. But there's nothing else here, is there?"
Loken left Mar to his grief and turned to his warriors, saying,
"Spread out and look for something, anything, that might give us some clue as to what happened here."
"You don't have any idea what we're looking for?" asked Vipers.
"No, not really," admitted Loken. "A weapon, maybe."
"You know we're going to have to search that fat bastard, don't you?"
Torgadden pointed out.
"Who's the lucky sod who gets to do that?"
"I thought that might be something you'd enjoy, Tarik."
"Oh, no. I'm not putting so much as a finger near that thing."
"I'll do it,"
said Ma, dropping to his knees and peeling away the sodden remnants of Yugen Temba's clothing and flesh.
"See?"
said Torgadden, backing away.
"Tybalt wants to do it. I say let him."
"Very well. Be careful, Tybalt,"
said Loken before turning away from the disgusting sight of Mar pulling apart Temba's corpse. His men began searching the bridge, and Loken climbed the steps to the captain's throne, staring out over the crew pits, now filled with all manner of vile excrescences and filth. It baffled Loken how such a glorious ship and a man of supposedly fine character could come to such a despicable end. He circled the throne, pausing as his foot connected with something solid. He bent down and saw a polished wooden casket. Its surfaces were smooth and clean, and it was clearly out of place in this reeking tomb. Perhaps the length and thickness of a man's arm, the wood was rich brown with strange symbols carved along its length. The lid opened on golden hinges, and Loken released a delicate catch that held it shut. The casket was empty, padded with a red velvet insert, and as he stared at its emptiness, Loken realized how thoughtless he'd been in opening it. He ran his fingers along the length of the casket, tracing the outline of the symbols, seeing something familiar in their elegantly cursive forms.
"Over here!"
shouted one of Lacaster, and Loken quickly gathered up the casket and made his way towards the source of the call. While Tybalt Mar disassembled the traitor's rotten body, Astarte's warriors surrounded something that gleamed on the deck. Loken saw that it was Eugen Tember's severed arm, the fingers still wrapped around the hilt of a strange, glittering sword with a blade that looked like grey flint.
"It's Tember's arm, right enough," said Vipers, reaching down to lift the sword.
"Don't touch it," said Loken. "If it laid the Warmaster low, I don't want to know what it could do to us."
Vipers recoiled from the sword as though it were a snake.
"What's that?"
asked Togadden, pointing at the casket. Loken dropped to his haunches, laying the casket next to the sword, unsurprised when he saw that the sword would fit snugly inside.
"I think it once contained this sword."
"Looks pretty new," said Vipers. "And what's that on the side? Writing?"
Loken didn't answer, reaching out to prize Tember's dead fingers from the sword hilt. Though he knew it was absurd, he grimaced with each finger he pried loose, expecting the hand to leap to life and attack him. Eventually, the sword was free, and Loken gingerly lifted the weapon.
"Careful," said Togadden.
"Thanks, Taric, and here was me about to throw it about.
Sorry."
Loken slowly lowered the sword into the casket. The handle tingled, and he had felt a curious sensation as he had said Taric's name, a sense of the monstrous harm the weapon could inflict. He snapped the lid shut, letting out a pent-up breath.
"How in the name of terror did someone like Tember get hold of a weapon like that?" asked Togadden. "It didn't even look human-made."
"It's not,"
said Loken, as the familiarity of the symbols on the side of the casket fell horribly into place.
"It's Kinnebrak."
"Kinnebrak?" asked Torgadden.
"But weren't they?"
"Yes," said Loken, carefully lifting the casket from the deck.
"This is the Anathane that was stolen from the Hall of Devices on Zenobia."
The word went out across the vengeful spirit at the speed of thought, and weeping men and women lined their route. Hundreds filled each passageway as the Astartes bore the Warmaster on a bier of kite-shaped shields. Clad in his ceremonial armor of winter white with burnished gold trims and the glaring red eye, the Warmaster's hands were clasped across his golden sword, and a laurel wreath of silver sat upon his noble brow. Abaddon, Aximand, Luke Sidere, Sergar Targost, Falkus Kyber, and Kalus Ekadon carried him. And behind the Warmaster came Hector Varvarus and Malaghurst. Each one wore shining armor, and their company cloaks billowed behind them as they walked. Heralds and criers announced the route of the cortege, and there was no repeat of the bloody scene on the embarkation deck, as the Astartes took this slow march with the beloved leader who had fought beside them since the earliest days of the Crusade. They wept as they marched, each one painfully aware that this might be the Warmaster's last journey. In lieu of flowers, the people threw torn scraps of tear-stained paper, each with words of hope and love written on them. Shown that the Warmaster still lived, his people burned herbs, said to have healing properties, hanging them from smoking censers all along the route, and from somewhere a band played the Legion March. Candles burned with a sweet smell, and men and women, soldiers and civilians, tore at themselves in their grief. Army banners lined the route, each dipped out of respect for the Warmaster, and pleading chants followed the procession until at last they came to the embarkation deck. Its vast gateway was wreathed in parchment, every square centimeter of bulkhead covered with messages for the Warmaster and his sons. Aximand was awed by the outpouring of sorrow and love for the Warmaster, the scale of people's grief at his wounding beyond anything in his experience. To him, the Warmaster was a figure of magnificence, but first and foremost, he was a warrior, a leader of men, and one of the Emperor's chosen. To these mortals, he was so much more. To them, the Warmaster was a symbol of something noble and heroic, beyond anything they could ever aspire to, a symbol of the new galaxy they were forging from the ashes of the Age of Strife. Horus's very existence promised an end to the suffering and death that had plagued humanity for centuries. Old night was drawing to a close, and, thanks to heroes like the Warmaster, the first rays of a new dawn were breaking on the horizon. All that was under threat now, and Aximand knew he had made the right choice in allowing the others to take Horus to Darvin. The Lodge of the Serpent would heal the Warmaster,
and if that involved powers he might once have condemned, then so be it. The die was cast, and all he had left to cling to was his faith that the War Master would be restored to them. He smiled as he remembered something the War Master had said to him on the subject of faith. The War Master had typically delivered his words of wisdom at a wholly inappropriate time, right before they had leapt from the belly of a screaming stormbird into the greenskin city on Ulanar. "When you have come to the edge of all that you know and are about to drop off into the darkness of the unknown, faith is knowing that one of two things will happen," the War Master had told him. "And what are they?" he had asked. "That there will be something solid to stand on, or you'll be taught to fly," laughed Horus as he jumped. The memory made the tears come all the harder as the huge iron gate of the embarkation deck rumbled closed behind them, and the Astartes marched towards the War Master's waiting stormbird.